Hi guys, and welcome to our first episode of The Middle Game with Lula and Amelia. I'm sorry, was it Middle Game without the "the"?
No, it's Middle Game with the
"the". It was, okay, The Middle Game. I just realized that maybe that makes us sound like we're middle-aged as well, but we're not.
No, we're not. We're young. We're young. We're flirty and thriving.
I don't think our audience will get that reference, Amelia.
They definitely will. It's such a popular movie.
I love 13 going on 30.
Me too.
Anyway, for those of you who are confused as to why you're here, we're just going to briefly introduce ourselves. So I'm going to let Amelia take it away.
Hi, my name is Amelia. I am a chess historian, currently getting her PhD in Soviet chess history. I also am what I like to call a chess observer. So I just like to hang around chess tournaments. I take photographs sometimes. I tweet a lot. And I hang out with Lula and Mr. Dodgy.
The first half of that introduction made you sound really cool. And then you ended with, I hang out with Lula and Mr. Dodgy, and it kind of fell off.
That's okay.
Amelia, you just played your first tournament. So how was that? And tell me about it.
It was good. Yeah, I did just play my first tournament. So maybe in my intro, I should have said that I was also kind of a semi-serious chess player now.
Yeah.
I played in the Sligo chess tournament in, it's actually not in Sligo. Well, it's in Sligo County, Ireland, but it's in Enniscrone. It's a bit of false advertising, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. I knew the organizer. His name is Craig. He's really great. And I was like looking for a fun tournament to play that wasn't too serious so that I could like try it out. Cause, you know, for the first, like, I've been playing chess since I was five. Like, I've known how to play since I was five, but like, I've never actually played in a chess tournament because it's not a huge thing in New Orleans, which is where I'm from. And so I was like, I think I'm ready to like dip my feet in the water and play some chess. And it was a lot of fun. I scored 1.5 out of 5. It is a little bit deceiving though, because my 1 point did come from the fact that in the final round, I did not get paired with anyone. So I was quite bummed about that, but overall it was fun. I feel like I played like pretty good games. Like, I didn't play stupidly. So that's really all that I could hope for.
Yeah, I think that the quality of your games or how you feel you played is a lot more important than the results that you get. Definitely, I feel a lot more proud coming out of a tournament feeling like I didn't play any bad games, no matter kind of if I won or lost rating. So, I mean, it's been a very long time since I played my first tournament.
What was your first tournament?
My first chess tournament was the Reykjavik Open in 2022. And it's a pretty big, well-known tournament. And so when I tell people it was my first tournament, they think I'm insane. Especially because most people's chess tournament is like something local to them. But I'm from Jersey in the Channel Islands and we didn't have any chess tournaments. So I had to travel for it anyway. And I thought, why not Iceland? If I'm going to go somewhere to play chess. And it was terrifying. Actually, it was really scary. And like I cried pretty much every night because I had severe imposter syndrome about being there at this tournament with all these like grandmasters and real chess players. And I felt like I just entered into this world where I didn't really belong yet. And I was trying to make it all make sense to me. But I'm so glad I did it because playing that tournament opened the door for me to not only meet a lot of new people, because I met a lot of my friends at that tournament and I'm still friends with some of them now. But just play other tournaments, and I think it really helped me with my imposter syndrome, because in chess, did you hear my cat meow? Sorry.
I did.
In chess, like, it can feel sometimes, if you're joining late, like you're joining a party that everybody knows each other at, and you feel like you don't know anybody, and it feels really awkward sometimes. So, yeah, I don't know if you felt like that.
No, I felt the exact same way, especially because like I feel like over the past 2 years, like being in the chess world but not necessarily a chess player, I feel like I kind of have just like been missing out or something, or I've just like haven't been fully a part of the community because I didn't play like over the board chess like seriously. And I think that's like there's an advantage to that and there's like a disadvantage to that. For me, like I never really cared necessarily about like actually playing chess over the board. Like I watch chess, I play with my friends sometimes. I have really bad anxiety, so like playing in a competition for me is like not something that particularly interests me, but I definitely wanted to like see what everyone was getting on about. And now like I kind of get it. It's quite addicting to like go to a chess match and like play against people and, you know, then analyze your games. And it's really fun. I think I got really lucky with my experience though, because like I went with Mr. Dodgy. So I already had a friend there. And then also too, I ended up going also with my partner. And when I would like come back to the room after playing my game, my partner was on the phone with his friends who they both also play chess, and they were like there watching my games. And it was a lot of fun to like feel like I had that support system and that like people cared about what I was doing. And so I think that that's quite a unique experience compared to other people who play their first tournament. And so I honestly felt very lucky. I think my first tournament experience was quite positive, which I know that that's not the case for a lot of people, or, you know, they don't feel like happy at the end of their tournaments. So I definitely got hashtag blessed with my first tournament experience, but I definitely have felt that kind of imposter syndrome in general, just being a part of the chess community, but not necessarily someone who takes playing like over the board chess very seriously.
Okay, I feel like I maybe gave the wrong impression. I really loved the Reykjavik Open. When I said I cried every night, that was like a me thing. Because, well, actually, I didn't give you the full story. I did travel to that tournament with some friends and we were all staying in an Airbnb, but they were all kind of better chess players than I was, or they didn't seem to be suffering with the same imposter syndrome, or at least they didn't outright say that they were. And so I really, really did appreciate having them there. And we kind of all showed each other our games after they were over. And like we talked through them and we helped each other prepare. And it was really exciting. And actually, we all watched The Shining together on the first night because I'd never seen it. And some of us, like we hadn't met before. We had been friends online. And so it was a like bonding experience. So I actually did really love that trip and that tournament. And it's a really important part of my chess journey to me. But yeah, I think that you did have quite a nice first tournament to go to. Like I've heard very good things about Sligo as well. Also having DGT boards at your first tournament is really nice. Like you weren't playing on like a plastic set, which is a real luxury.
Yeah, that's true.
But do you have plans to play your second tournament yet, or are you not thinking about that?
So far, I want to play in the Austrian Women's League. Like, I've reached out to her name is Regina. She is like, I think she's the number two female chess player in Austria because we just got a new, I think she's either Russian or Ukrainian. And I think she's a W. Or I think she's an IM. I don't know. I can't remember her name to save my life. But so I plan on playing in the Austrian Women's League. And then I do want to play in another tournament. I am feeling quite like I need to scratch that itch again. But I have no idea which one I want to play in. I was thinking about going to Grenca, but I decided not to go to Grenca. I really can't play any chess tournaments until after June because I need to pass my comprehensive exam, but I don't know what tournaments do you want to play in?
Whenever you say you have exams, I'm so glad I'm not in school anymore. My next tournament I think will be I'm playing a tournament at the end of May in Italy. Ooh. And what I didn't realize when I agreed to it, because they invited a couple of streamers to go and stream, so that's kind of why I'm going, is usually now these days I just go to stream and play rather than going to tournaments just to play undercover, because actually I'll tell you about it later, but going to tournaments undercover as a streamer is impossible now. I'm really excited about this tournament in Italy because I've realized that it's 20 plus and there's a separate kids tournament.
And wait, that's so nice.
Right?
That's so nice.
I'm so excited because playing kids is something I dread as somebody who's getting, you know, further and further away from being like a young person. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm closer to 30 now than 20. Playing kids is like not something I want to do when I sign up for a tournament. So I'm very excited. It will also be my first weekender. So actually you're more experienced than me in playing a weekend tournament. Every tournament I've played has been like a 7 or 9 round tournament that's taken place over a week. So I'm so not used to playing 2 games a day for multiple days in a row, but I'm very excited to not be playing chess for 2 weeks because it really does drag on sometimes when you're playing a 9-round tournament and there are rest days or something like this, and you end up like just kind of wanting the tournament to be over, especially if you end up having a bad time, like if you end up playing bad chess. So I'm very, very excited for not only no kids, but also, I mean, it's going to be in Italy in May, so I'm going to be spending a lot of my time drinking Aperol Spritz, but I will also get to go home within 1 week. So it's honestly perfect.
Yeah, honestly, I am really happy that I chose a weekender as my first tournament. Like, okay, so the way that it ended up happening is I played my game on Friday and then I didn't sleep well that first night. I played my game on Saturday morning and I ended up taking a bye in the third round because I was exhausted and I was like, I need a nap so bad. And then I played my first game on Sunday morning, and then I don't know if I told you this, but during our game, so I was playing this 9-year-old kid, and he was so adorable, but you could tell he did not want to be there. And his dad was there, and I asked him, and I was like, how are you enjoying your tournament? Like, do you play a lot of chess? He was like, I'm a beginner. Like, I'm just here because my dad is here. I'm like quite new to chess. It's not really like my thing though. And so I asked him, I was like, what is your thing? And he was like, I like to play Geometry Dash. And he was like, I also like to play video games. And I was like, that's really cool. He's like 9. And then, so we're playing this game. He plays the London. I low-key fibbed to him a little bit because he was like, are you a beginner too? And I was like, yeah. He was like, do you know any openings? And I don't know why, but I really felt like this kid was trying to psych me out. So I told him, no, like, I don't really know any openings. He was like, well, after this, if you want, I can teach you how to play the London. And I was like,
that's, I was like, so cute.
It was,
that's
so adorable. Cute. It was adorable. That's, and so
cute.
We're playing this game, and then in the middle of the game, we're at a point where, like, he's being, like, quite aggressive. I looked at his games before, and honestly, I don't think that he was clearly still a beginner, and, like, the games that he had played before, like, he literally would just, like, blunder pieces, but he was actually not playing horribly this game, but there was a point where I was like, didn't know what to do, and I was really afraid he was gonna checkmate me. And he whispers to me, he was like, do you want some help? I was like, no, thank you, because I also didn't want him to get in trouble for talking to me during the game. So it was so, like, kind of embarrassing though. I was like, because I was quite stressed. And I think you could tell.
Unhinged. I love that. That's adorable. You absolutely didn't tell me about this. Oh my gosh. I always try to be so nice to the kids before the game starts, you know, like, because they're usually a bit nervous. They're there with, like, usually only one of their parents. Very often they don't have a pen, like, they don't come prepared. And so you need to, like, help them find a pen. Like, you sometimes need to, like, find their parents and stuff like this. But then as soon as the game starts, I've realized that I've got a really, like, angry game face that I didn't know I had, because as soon as the chess starts, I stop thinking about my face. And I have like resting, very, very grumpy face, apparently. Even when I'm winning, it looks like I'm having the worst time. And I just think that these kids must have, like, they must be so confused because I'm so nice to them. And then as soon as the chess starts, like, I turn into this evil witch lady.
I never thought about my face during the tournament, but I, at one point, like, during that game, no, it wasn't during that game. It was during my round two game. I had to like go to the bathroom and give myself a pep talk like in the mirror. And
be like in the Queen's Gambit.
Yeah, it was when, if you go, listeners, to look at my game, it's during like when he was trying to sack his rook. And I was so confused as to why he wanted to sack his rook. And I figured it out later. It's because he wanted to eventually like fork my rooks, but I didn't want to accept like his rook sack. But I was like going to the bathroom and I had to give myself a pep talk and I had to like massage my face because my face was so tense. Like it's quite stressful. Like I don't think people have been looking at because the freestyle chess thingy is going on right now and they have like heart rate monitors like on the players, or it just ended actually. But they had heart rate monitors on the players and Gukesh's heart rate is like 61 the entire time.
How? What?
I don't know.
That's like complete resting. Like a long time ago when I first started streaming, I had a heart rate monitor on. By the way, Freestyle stole that from me. No, I'm kidding. But my heart rate reached like 140 after I sacrificed my queen. It was like the final round of my first ever like online cash tournament, like prize tournament. And I was about to win the tournament by like a queen sacrifice. And I couldn't believe it, right? Because I was still relative chess beginner. And I didn't ever win anything before. So my heart rate went through the roof. Like it peaked at 140 and then like went back down to normal. It was insane. I don't understand how Gukesh can stay at 60.
He's just like a different breed, I think. I don't understand it either. He's I was having calm. Like a panic like attack. I have no idea. And I stress eat too, so I brought a lot of snacks. So I would just like stand in the corner and stress eat.
Oh, really? You know, I always bring a lot of snacks. But I find the more focused I am on the game, the less snacks I have. But I know that when I reach time control or whatever, I should have a snack and I should walk around. But if I'm super focused, I don't want to do that. And I find it hard to force myself.
Yeah, it is really hard. I think just because you and Dachi gave me so much advice about like, make sure you eat, make sure you stay hydrated. Like I was quite aware of that. And I honestly could tell the difference. Like after I had a snack, I had a lot more energy. So
that's good. And like these tournaments can be really grueling. I'm currently doing commentary for the Isle of Wight Masters, which is going on. Mr. Dodgy is playing in it right now. And I realized I already knew I love commentating so much, but I have like a tiny, teeny, tiny little bit of FOMO because when you have the player cams and you like see them going and setting up and you kind of know that butterflies feeling that they have right before the game starts. And it seems really special because I kind of used to get that also before exams, but in a bad way. But it's a feeling I now just like don't get unless I'm going to play a chess tournament. It feels like a very singular, unique experience.
Yeah, I felt really alive while I was playing. But the Isle of Wight tournament has been so interesting because I'm assuming I definitely watched your commentary yesterday, but I did hear that Jovanka played like quite an awesome game yesterday. Or was it the game before that?
I honestly, both of the games of hers that I've seen were on round four today. So I didn't do commentary for round one, but round two and three, she played amazing games. And in round two, she had this beautiful, beautiful bishop sacrifice to win her game. And then in round three, she drew with the top seed, Grandmaster Bobby Cheng from Australia. So that's huge. Wow. He did have kind of like a win opportunity. And like she did have bad pawn structure going into the ending. And I was like, oh my gosh, I really wouldn't want to play this pawn structure. But Jovanka is just, she's such a professional and like she made those pawns look like not even like a problem. So I think doing commentary makes chess feel a lot richer for me because I see not only a lot of openings I never play, but just you see how, you know, these professional chess players play chess, and it reminds you of actually why you started playing chess in the first place, because there's this wonder to chess that I think hooks you when you first start playing. But kind of the longer you play and the more you lose, the easier it is to forget that that wonder exists at all, because you start to become self-critical. You start to think like, I'm just blundering all the time. What am I doing? Some people even start to develop like a fear of playing. But this wonder I've felt from commentating and from watching these games has been honestly very inspiring. I'm not sure it's made me want to play more, because I know I can't play the same way they can, but it's definitely made me want to watch more chess.
That's why I have not really been, or at least in the past 2 years, that's why I never really got into playing over the board chess. Because I watch a lot of chess, and I love listening to people commentate on it and like hearing their thoughts, and I thoroughly enjoy watching the game. It's just such a exciting experience for me, and it's almost like I'm like living vicariously through the people that are playing chess, especially at the top level, because I know that I can't play like that ever.
Exactly.
Like, really, really enjoy watching it. And I really love when there are good commentators. Like, I think you've been doing a really good job at commentating, especially when it comes to, like, you're not too overly analytical. I know a lot of commentators who just spew out lines who I have no idea what they're saying, and I need them to, like, take it a step back. That's, like, one thing that I've really kind of been advocating for over the past 2 years is people know this about me, but I was like really, I loved the Oslo studio that chess.com had, and I was really happy because I think that when you bring together people who are charismatic but can also commentate and make chess quite accessible, it's so much easier to get more people into the sport, more people watching chess. And I really was kind of hoping that that would continue. It unfortunately has not, but at least like we still have good commentators like David Howell. I know Kaya doesn't really do much anymore, but even Tanya, she's really great at commentating, but also keeping like the emotional aspect of it into chess. And so I think you've been doing a really good job at commentating, Lula. What has been your, your favorite part of the tournament so far? Are there any games, like maybe not by high levels, that you've seen that were really good? How are Dodgy's games, actually?
I took a look at Dodgy's game yesterday. I'm not going to lie, in round two, I didn't look because the top board games we were covering were so interesting. No offense, Dodgy. He played a very solid game in round three. He made a draw with a slightly lower rated opponent. You know, it happens. His opponent played solidly as well. The games that I've been loving are kind of like the games that I could never see myself playing, if that makes sense. Like, I love to see this kind of these different play styles. I don't have the names, but yesterday an IM found this absolutely insane drawing tactic against his grandmaster opponent, basically sacrificing his queen to threaten promoting another queen and then threaten a perpetual check with a knight. It was totally absurd. And like, anyone who thinks chess is boring, I would need them to see this game. But like, with regards to watching chess, are you going to Levy's tour in Vienna? Because I know it's coming to Austria, and I'm very upset it's not coming to Paris.
Yeah, I am going to Levy's tour, actually. I'm going with three of my friends, and I am very excited. I have been very lucky to be close to the people who are like putting on the tour, and so but he is coming to Vienna. I have, because that's listeners where I currently live. I don't think I mentioned that before, but I am really excited for it. I don't know what it's gonna be about, frankly. I think that it happened in Hamburg where they did like a trial run of the show, and Fiona Steele Anthony was there, and it was, I think, went well. Like, it was a full house. The last time I checked, like, there were like almost no tickets left. So I literally have no idea like what the show is going to be about.
I know his last one was to promote his book, right? But this one, I really have no idea. Yeah. I don't know. Do you think it will be like one of those reality TV shows where people come on and he has to do a paternity test or something?
Maybe. Do you think he's the new Maury? Is that his name? Maybe. Maury? Maury?
I don't.
I think it's
Maury.
In the
UK, it was Jeremy Kyle, but he got taken off the air because he was mean to people.
Oh,
I think. I don't know. Funny. Like, he probably did something really bad I don't know about.
yeah.
I don't know what it could be, though. I'm excited. Same. Actually, I met Levy's manager in Paris for the Speeches Championship in September. And for those of you who don't know, I'm based in Paris. And he was really cool. Like, Levy's manager used to work a lot with like WWE wrestlers and stuff.
Oh, and, cool.
Right? And then like this, now he's working with Levy. So like, I have a feeling, I don't think Levy's going to be doing wrestling, but I have a feeling that his manager is like bringing like a new angle to things. You know, I don't know how long they've been working together, but it definitely is a new direction for Levy.
No, I totally agree. I know that they're going to have like guests come on the show, like guests local to either like Vienna or just Austria. They're gonna have them come to the show and like play against him, and I think he's gonna too like talk about stuff. I know he's gonna do Guess the Elo live, which is gonna cool, which I think that might be like, maybe he'll play against like people in the crowd, which would be fun. So
and then guess their strength based on how they play against him.
Yeah. And so, but I think that would be quite cool and fun to watch. But I do agree that Levy's manager he's really like taking things, I think, to another level. I know he just, there's a little bit of chess gossip, but he just started like a new, it's like a, almost like a agency for specifically like chess players. And then I think he's also doing golf. Saw that on his page that it's called like Apollo Management or something. And I saw the other day that he was hiring someone to like manage the golf people. I don't know anything about golf though. So.
Me neither. Actually, I saw a couple of grandmasters have been signed to esports agencies in the past couple of weeks. So like, this is kind of off the back of that, like management for chess players. So actually, I saw Arjun Aragassi. He just got signed to one of the biggest esports agencies, which is crazy because like 5 years ago, even you wouldn't have seen that happening.
Yeah, it's quite interesting how like the chess space is transforming. Even in the past 2 years, it's like quite different now in the publicity that chess gets now, whether it's for the right reasons or not, like Genesgate, like, you know. So I think that for it's really great. I'm really happy, but also at the same time, it's been a lot of I hate to pull this card, but it's been a lot of male chess players getting signed to esports agencies. I really want some female chess players to, I know Anna Maya has one, and so just like I think like you said, Anna Kremling, but I want some more like top female. Get Ju and Jun on an esports team.
I want Ju and Jun to have her own TV show. Like, I love Ju and Jun. Like, I want to say I met her, but that's like a gross exaggeration. I saw her in the London Chess Classic, and I was too afraid because I'm one of these people who, like, if I see a celebrity or if I see just like a chess player that I don't know, I don't want to bother them, right? I don't want to be that person. So I will absolutely never go up to them and ask for a photo or anything. Like, I will never, ever do this. I don't know if it means I come across as unfriendly, but I really don't want to bother people. But, like, I was kind of, like, fangirling quietly in the corner, and then someone I was with was like, I'm going to go and ask her for a photo. And I was like, no, please don't. Like, no, absolutely not. And then he went over and he asked if Ju and Jun would take a picture with me. And she was like, yeah, of course. Because like, she's really nice. She's not going to say no because she's just a really nice person. And so I now have like a selfie of me and Ju and Jun where we both look kind of awkward because I would never have asked and she probably didn't want to do it. So I'm a big fan. I would definitely love to see more media coverage of women's chess in general because, I mean, people say that we get coverage of men. I don't want to call it men's chess because it's open chess, but let's be honest, it's 99% men. Because like there's a bigger audience for it, but also there's a bigger audience for it because that's what we're being fed. Like,
yeah,
if you feed us this media, we will want this media, you know?
Exactly. No, I totally agree. And also I really feel you when it comes to, I have this weird thing with celebrities where I hate kind of the idea of a celebrity. So I try, if I see them in public, I don't like to acknowledge they exist because I find it weird that human beings like put like these random people up above us, like normal people, because they are in movies and stuff. And so I feel kind of the same way about chess players. But also in my brain, I'm like, you just play a little board game. Like, I don't like, I get it. But I went to Tata Steel about, I went to Tata Steel last year, but I also went to Tata Steel the year before. And I got a press pass. I was taking photos. And when I went to Tata Steel, it was the first time that I had gone like by myself to a chess tournament just to take photos. I wasn't playing. And so when you have like a media pass, you get access to like the media room, which is in an area like where the chess players take photos and do interviews with Fiona. And I remember I was sitting on the couch and I was watching the games because they have like a live board up there. And it was when Fabi was playing against Parham, and they were in this really long end game, and Prague had just finished his game, and he came and he sat next to me on the couch, and I was like, this is really awkward. Like, do I say hello? And he literally turns to me and he goes, I think Fabi's got this in the bag. And then he spewed off this like 11 move line of like what Fabi should do. And I politely like turned to him and I went, I totally agree, but I'll be honest, I'm not really a chess player. And so I don't really know what you said. And so, and he just giggled and it was so funny. But like, honestly, I think that not bothering chess players, I love it because then like they'll talk to you about stuff that isn't chess and you'll like actually get to know them. And that has like been the number one thing that I've enjoyed in the past 2 years that I've been in the chess world, is just becoming friends with chess players like outside of chess.
I mean, this is absolutely true. Like, every grandmaster I've spoken to doesn't want to talk about chess. Like, they have no interest in talking about chess. And that's totally valid because like it's their job, and to reduce somebody to just their job is like kind of harsh, you know. I wouldn't want that to happen to me. Like, I don't want to talk about chess when I'm out with my friends either. So no, I totally get that. Have you ever had like weird run-ins with celebrities? Like, relatively recently I saw Elle Fanning in Heathrow Airport and I just ignored her because I was like, yeah, I'm one of those people who ignores people, like ignores celebrities. I don't know. I like, it sounds weird now, but like, I think this is the normal response. Like, I think it's weird to swarm someone.
I totally agree. I actually have quite a few run-ins with celebrities. I'll tell you my favorite one. So when I was a senior in high school, I had quite a flexible schedule and I was able to like leave school. I only did half days essentially of school because I was done with all my credits. And so New Orleans is like now quite a big film industry city. So we had a lot of movies that were filming there. And so I would apply to like be an extra on these movies. And I apply to be an extra on this movie with Noah Centineo. Do you know who Noah Centineo is?
I don't, but I'm sure he's very famous.
He's the guy that was in To All the Boys I Loved Before.
Oh, I did see that, actually. No, I did see that. Okay.
And so
you were an extra?
I was an extra on this movie. And I – so one of the nights – so when I was a senior in high school, I was essentially living alone in this apartment that my mom had rented us so that I could go to the school that I went to. So one of the nights it was a night shoot, and so I had to go, like, essentially for an 18-hour night shoot. And
oh my gosh.
It was great. It paid very well.
Okay.
But I also had homework to do because I was still in school. And so I would bring my homework to the, like, movie set with me, and I would, like, hide it. We were in this, like, room, and I was positioned, like, near a window ledge, and I had to read this, like, Noam Chomsky book for one of my history classes. And so I, like, had the Noam Chomsky book, like, next to me, and we were, like, filming this scene, and Cami Mendes is also in this movie, and she was, like, standing kind of in, like, this little, it was a party scene, so she was standing in this group that I was in. And in between takes, I would pull out my book and I would read. And when you're on a movie set like this, there's a director, like, specifically for the extras. He's the assistant director. And then there's, like, the director, which works specifically with the movie stars. And right. So I was sitting on this window ledge and I was reading my book in between takes. While the AD is kind of talking to other extras about what to do. And the actual director walks up to me and he goes, "Are you reading Noam Chomsky on my movie set?" And I was like, yes, I have homework. And he goes, he laughed so hard and he was like, "That is the funniest thing I have ever seen." He's like, says this quite loudly in this room full of people. And Noah Centineo is like, kind of standing down the ledge from me, like in another group, and he like looks at me and we make eye contact, and it was, I just like politely smile. It, I felt really awkward because I didn't want to like acknowledge his existence, but after the next tape, Noah Centineo actually like comes up to me and he's like, "Oh, what book are you reading?" And I was like, am I in a fan fiction right now? Am I Y/N? Like, I don't know. I was like, this is really awkward. And I was like, "Oh, I'm reading Noam Chomsky, like, for my history class." And he was like, "That's really interesting." Like, and he has a book in his back pocket and he goes, "This is the book I'm reading right now." And Noah Centineo and I talk about books for like 5 minutes while they reset the shot. And
wait, what was he reading though? Like,
he was reading this like play. I cannot for the life of me remember what it's about. It was kind of like vaguely about, it was some like riff on A Streetcar Named Desire, I think. And
okay.
But honestly couldn't tell you what his okay. book was about. But this, it was really awkward.
Part of your acting career though. Like, you should have, you know, followed up with that director.
That's so true. I actually have Noah Centineo's phone number after all of these years. We ended up, because at the time I was in like a media arts program and I would like make films all the time and I wanted to be like a filmmaker. And he was actually super nice to me. And he was like, "Yeah, of course. Like, if you ever need like anything, like, here's my email, here's my phone number, like, we can connect." But I hate acknowledging his existence because he is a celebrity. And so I just never contacted him, and then life happens and now I am a chess historian. So funny how the world works.
I thought you were going to tell us about the time you met Hillary Clinton, but I guess this is for next episode.
Yeah, we can talk about Hillary Clinton and Timothée Chalamet next episode.
Speaking of Timothée Chalamet, what are your Oscars predictions? Do you have any?
I think that little Timmy, he's finally going to win an Oscar. What do you think?
I saw this TikTok a couple of weeks ago about how like no actor born since like 1992 or 1993 has won an Oscar or something, and how the Academy just like refuses to give Oscars to young actors. And so this person was theorizing that they really think that Adrian Brody will win it because of this. Honestly, I'm going to see The Brutalist on Saturday, okay, so I can't make a comment. But Timothée Chalamet, I'm not a big Timmy fan, but A Complete Unknown was so, so good. And I'm not a Bob Dylan fan either, okay? So, like, I'm not the target audience for this. But I love that film. Like, I wept. I cried. It was so good. And I forgot that it was Timothée Chalamet for, like, at least 90% of the film. Like, his Bob Dylan was so good. And actually, I think he probably does deserve it. I haven't seen Conclave, and I haven't seen The Apprentice, which are some other, like, contenders for best actor is Ralph Fiennes and Sebastian Stan. But I actually did see Sing Sing, which is this amazing movie, which if you haven't seen it, Amelia, I think you'd love it. And Colman Domingo is up for best actor for this, so I think he could also get it. Basically, it's a film about a theater program in Sing Sing prison in New York, and a lot of the ex-prisoners actually play themselves and like how they were rehabilitated through the program. So I also wept. Like, for me, it's not a good movie if I didn't cry, honestly.
Yeah. Well, did you hear about the controversy with Adrian Brody about how the film, they used AI to make him sound more Hungarian? And so they...
I did see this. And then I saw a clarification yesterday that it was just one of those parts where he's speaking in Hungarian, which I didn't realize he was speaking in Hungarian in any parts of the film, because I haven't seen it just yet. I was meant to see it last week, but I got sick. So I'm like less critical if it was to make his Hungarian sound better, more critical if it was just to improve his accent.
I heard it was just to improve his accent, but I think that, like, if, I don't know, I have to say, I think that, you know, I know a lot of languages are hard, and Hungarian especially is a very hard language to learn. But I don't know how I feel about using AI, like, especially in movies. I just saw the new Captain America movie, Brave New World. It is riddled with AI. Like, you can tell that half of the script was written with ChatGPT. Like, the special effects are clearly AI, and they're so bad. Like, it's quite honestly one of the worst movies I've seen in the past, like, year.
Okay, well, I wasn't going to see it anyway, but now I'm really not going to see it. What about Best Picture? Because I'm really hoping for Anora, because I loved Anora so much. Do you have a favorite to win Best Picture?
I don't know. I just, my number one thing is I don't want Emilia Perez to win it. Emilia Perez was so bad. I am Emilia, but Emilia Perez was so bad. Like, and I don't understand why it's winning all of these awards.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. Like, I've heard mixed reviews from my friends who have seen it. Like, some of them thought it was actually all right. I haven't seen it, and I refuse to, because I feel like I've seen enough of the clips online. But it is insane that it's nominated for, like, almost every category, right? I think Wicked is also up for Best Picture. So is The Substance. I've seen both of those, but I actually don't think either of them deserve Best Picture. That might be a controversial
statement. Really? Why? That is controversial.
Like, I thought they were good. But for me, Anora and A Complete Unknown were better. And there are also like four other films in that category. Like I said, I haven't seen Conclave. I haven't seen The Brutalist yet. Dune Part 2 is also up for Best Picture, which I haven't seen. But I didn't want to see it because I haven't seen Dune Part 1. And I know like everyone's seen this, and I really need to get around to watching it. But I heard that it was very good.
It was very good. I was about to say I would love if Dune Part 2 won Best Picture. I think that the movie was so good. The acting was incredible. I wouldn't be sad either if Wicked won, but it's not that I don't think they deserve to win. I just don't think that they will win. Like, I think Ariana Grande will win Best Supporting Actress. And I think that it's possible that Cynthia Erivo, actually, I don't know if Cynthia Erivo will win Best Actress.
I think Demi Moore will probably win Best Actress, although I probably really would like Mikey Madison to win it for Anora. There's also, in a lot of these major categories, the film I'm Still Here, which I did see, except because I live in Paris, I saw it. It's called Je suis toujours là, like it's like in French, and so I saw it with French subtitles, and this is something I do a lot, is like I go to the cinema and see foreign films with French subtitles, and like it's really good for learning French, but I'd say my French is like a strong intermediate, and this film was one where it was just a little bit too tricky at times for me to really get the nuance of it. Mm-hmm. Because it's in Portuguese and it has French subtitles, so I'm really trying here because I don't speak a lot of Portuguese. And it was a really, really amazing film. It's up for Best Picture. Fernanda Torres is up for Best Actress. And I think it's in a couple of other categories too, but definitely one to watch. I'd really like to rewatch it with English subtitles because I feel like some of it was lost on me in translation.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly think the Oscars this year is going to be one of those awards that it could go to anyone. Like, it's totally up for grabs. And so I would like to see Kieran Culkin win Best Supporting Actor in A Real Pain.
Have you seen A Real Pain?
I have seen the trailers for it, and it looks really good. And even in the trailers, his acting seems, like, so good.
I can't wait to see it, but it doesn't come out here for, like, another week. There was this one early showing, like, 2 weeks ago in Paris, and I missed it. And I've been waiting so long to see this movie, and I've been seeing the same trailers, and I've been seeing so much from their press tour. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to see it. I love Jesse Eisenberg. Kieran Culkin is so good. I also think that he might win this for A Real Pain. But yeah, I feel like I have very high expectations for it when I see it next week.
Yeah, me too. I have heard only good things about it. And also too, I know that he had quite a difficult time, like, you know, after all the Home Alone stuff, like, just growing up, especially kind of as a child actor, I know he had quite a difficult life, and to see him kind of transform into this more serious actor, especially too, because he was in, what's the show called?
Succession.
Yeah, he was in Succession, and I loved him in Succession. I thought he was
really good.
He was really good. But also too, in Austria, we don't get movies until like 2 months later after they come out. Like, A Complete Unknown doesn't come out until the 27th here. So
you have to go see it though. I can't wait to hear what you think.
I'm excited. I'm going to see it with my friend that I met Timothée Chalamet with at the Venice Film Festival. Huge. And so, because she lives here in Vienna now, and I'm excited.
Beautiful. Anyway, I think that by next week we will have seen a couple more films, or by next episode, we will have seen a couple more of these films, so we can pick up then. But for now, I think that's going to be the end of our pilot episode of The Middle Game. How do you feel it went, Amelia?
I think it went really well. I'm really excited about our podcast. We're trying this thing where we're, yes, doing chess, but also kind of talking about our own lives. And I think it was quite interesting, if I do say so myself. But I might be biased.
Just like you listening back to only your part of the podcast. No, I'm kidding. Thank you so much for doing this with me and for suggesting it as well, because we love to yap, and we used to call all the time and yap. And now that we're so busy in our own lives and you're doing your PhD, I feel like it's something that we really lost, and this is just a great way to go back to that.
No, I totally agree. And hopefully we will transition to having a video podcast. At the moment, me and my camera are being a bit finicky, so I need to figure that out. But right now, we are going to be an audio podcast until I can fix my camera.
Just for the record, guys, I thought we were going to film video podcast today, so I look really hot. So if you guys
she does.
Just envision me looking really good, like better than you've ever seen me look by about 15%. Mm-hmm. That would be good. Yeah.
Yeah. I can confirm she looks great. So I also did my hair for this and like
yeah,
put on a nice sweater.
Your hair looks beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So how do people end a podcast? Do they just
I don't know.
Goodbye.
I think we just, yeah. Bye guys.
Bye guys.